exploring women's contributions to the literary world here on The Morning Show. Women have long had an appetite for education and culture, and this cuts across class, it cuts across race. And these tendencies may be what seeded early successes for women to get a toehold in the publishing world. And Publishers Weekly took note of women's achievements in book selling in 1928. More than a third of bookstores back then were started by women. Women readers, how have bookstores or book clubs impacted your life? We're at 800-642-1234. You can join in. Rosalind Reisner is a librarian and author. She co-wrote and edited the book Women in the Literary Landscape, a centennial publication of the Women's National Book Association. She blogs and reviews books at areadersplace.net. Rosalind, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So the reoccurring theme, the drumbeat through this whole book is that women have always been there. They've always been contributing. It just hasn't been recognized. And often women were finding ways to contribute despite men and their wishes, which is the story of the Women's National Book Association. How and why did the association form?
Well, the Women's National Book Association was founded in 1917 when a group of women booksellers in New York City discovered that they could not become members of the American Booksellers Association, which was then and still is today the major trade association for the bookselling industry. It was an all-male group, and they didn't want women to join. So these women booksellers decided, the heck with them, we'll form our own organization, and they named it the Women's National Book Association. And the organization is still going strong 101 years later, and now has, in addition to the founding New York chapter, 11 chapters around the country. If you think back to 1917, at that time women didn't have the vote yet, and they had very few legal rights, especially once they got married. Women, of course, as you said, were just as intelligent and talented then as they are today, but they didn't have much scope for their abilities. So they often channeled their energies into clubs, organizations, and movements that supported progressive causes. So the WNBA women believed that putting the right book in the hands of the right people could change the world. They were very idealistic. And of course, 2 years after they were formed, the American Booksellers Association came calling and said, why don't you merge with us? And the women said, no thanks. We're doing just fine on our own, and we feel there is a need for women to have their own organization.
Well, let's take a look at some of these women. The book features so many of these influential female editors and authors and writers. And can you tell us first about Margaret Fuller and the impact that she had?
Sure. Margaret Fuller was born in 1810, and she must have been a genius. She learned Latin at an early age. She learned Greek from Ralph Waldo Emerson. She thirsted after knowledge all her life. And she became involved as the only woman with the Transcendentalist movement, which was very consisted of a lot of eminent men, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Thoreau, and so on. And she edited their magazine called The Dial. She started a literary salon for women in Boston, inviting women to get together to study and discuss literature, art, and philosophy. But then her career really took off. She was asked by Horace Greeley, the editor of the New York Tribune, to be a book reviewer, and she became the first book reviewer in the country. And then after a few years, Greeley sent her overseas as a foreign correspondent, so she became the first female foreign correspondent. And at that point in Europe, there were lots of civil wars and rebellions, and so she covered all of that. And since she was someone who didn't like to sit on the sidelines, she got involved in the Italian Civil War. She married an Italian, and she was right in the middle of things. Unfortunately, she and her husband and their infant died in a shipwreck on their way back to this country.
What's interesting, and I'm going to stop you there for a moment, what's really here is that, and you can see it in her, that women morph, that they were wearing multiple hats. Everyone wore multiple hats in the literary world, and this sometimes was the only type of work women could get outside the home. What about that impact to be able to do a lot of different things?
For some women, that was very freeing. There were women who became in the 1800s became editors of journals that were appealed to women, like Godey's Ladies Book, which was kind of the cosmopolitan of its day. And so they were freed up to travel, to work in positions, as you said, that women were never able to work in. And the whole club movement was started because women in the 1890s, because women really needed outlets for their talents. And those women in those clubs all over the United States supported all kinds of wonderful literary and other kinds of progressive causes because they had no other way to utilize their talents.
We're talking about women's contributions to the literary and book world with Rosalind Reisner as our guide. She co-wrote and edited the book Women in the Literary Landscape. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Who is your favorite female writer and what do you like about her work? What about an author that has impacted your life? We'll continue the conversation ahead right here on the Ideas Network. We're on a tour through the history of publishing and women's role in the book world here on The Morning Show. And this is a history lesson that stretches back to the earliest days of our country. We're learning about colonial publishers and writers and pioneering journalists and magazine editors who all made an impact on this field. And along the way, it set up women to have this outsized impact on an industry. Women were also leaders in the creation of libraries. They went into business opening bookstores. How has your local library or librarian helped you? What bookstore is part of your life? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us WPR Mornings. Rosalind Reisner is leading our tour. She is an author. Rosalind, you know, in the 19th century, 1800s, reading was prevalent simply because there weren't other forms of entertainment. We didn't have the smartphones. We didn't have the Netflix. And because of that, many people had their own personal libraries. How did that evolve to form public libraries?
Well, it did evolve to form public libraries because there was a demand for books and reading. You know, we don't really cover in the book how the libraries were formed, but a lot of the librarians were women, and some of them really turned the profession of librarianship around. I think of someone like Carolyn Ewan, who in the late 1800s was the librarian in Hartford, Connecticut. And at that point, children were not welcomed in libraries, if you can imagine that. And she realized there was a tremendous need for children's materials, and she opened up a children's room and bought child-sized furniture so that children felt welcomed in the libraries. And she not only stayed in Hartford to do that, she really traveled around and exhorted librarians all over the country to welcome children into their libraries. She became a beloved figure in the American Library Association.
We also saw the impact during the Depression era. Mary Utopia Rothrock, responsible for the library of one of the largest economic development efforts at the time, the Tennessee Valley Authority. Can you tell us about her story?
Yes, she was really quite amazing. What a wonderful name, Mary Utopia Rothrock.
Yeah.
So in the 1930s, when the federal government was setting up Tennessee Valley Authority, they really wanted the people who moved to the area to work to have educational resources and libraries. And so they hired Mary to set up libraries and to make sure that books were distributed. This was a rural area. And so she found out that the workmen all came to certain central points every day to pick up and drop off their toolboxes. And so she had book deposit stations at those points so that the men could take books home. And she also hired women to distribute books on pack horses throughout the rural areas. She was determined that books were going to be available to everyone.
We also know about bookmobiles as well. You write about Mary Titcomb creating the first bookmobile, and Teresa West, a Wisconsin native, becoming the American Library Association's first female president in 1911. Can you talk about West and the other women in this library world?
There were a lot of very young women who got a chance to run libraries out in Los Angeles. One of the first library directors was a very young woman who just knocked on the door of one of the council members who happened to live next door to her, and she said, "I want this job." And they gave it to her. There was a lot of interesting opportunities in those early years. In terms of bookstores, women became very involved in opening bookstores in the 19-teens and 1920s. One of our founding members, Madge Jennison, opened a bookstore with her friend Mary Horgan Mowbray Clark in New York. And what was interesting about their bookstore was it was a very cozy place. It had warm woodwork, comfortable chairs, art hanging on the walls. Booksellers who wanted to talk to their customers about books, and authors who gave readings. And that probably sounds very familiar to all your listeners as the kind of bookstore that everyone wants in their community now. So women were the first to come up with the thought that bookstores should be comfortable, relaxing places for people to read and learn about books.
Pretty visionary stuff there, that they were also creating mail order book service, and you know, they were creating a space for author readings and art exhibits. This is what we know as bookstores today.
Yes, and it was really women who saw that this was the need. They really wanted people to come in and feel comfortable.
How did they, and we have to go to a break here very quickly, but keep their bookstores open and going strong? Did they have to rely on each other?
I think it was hard work, but in fact, the bookstore that was opened by Madge Jennison and her friend only lasted about 10 years. But I think women really worked those angles, bringing in the author readings and making them personal, just the way small bookstores today, you know, rely on that.
And we have to pause right there, talking with author Rosalind Reisner about women's contributions to the publishing world through time. We'll continue the conversation after a news update on the Ideas Network. It is a conversation about women in the literary world, this historical look back on The Morning Show, how women were influential in getting bookstores and libraries started across the country. Women were at the forefront of librarianship. How has your local library or librarian helped you? We're at 800-642-1234. Rosalind Reisner is with us. She's a librarian and author, co-wrote and edited the book Women in the Literary Landscape, a centennial publication of the Women's National Book Association. Let's go to a call now. Let's go to Dan joining us from Drummond. Hi, Dan. What's on your mind?
Well, I tell you, if I have to pick one woman to admire, it's a lady that I used to live here. Her name is Claire Bonnet. And when she retired some 30 years ago, she started writing poetry. Her son just recently, within the last year, had all that poetry published through the University of Provo, Utah.
Hmm.
And it's just I would like to do something, if I may.
So she turned to poetry, Dan. We're short on time, and I want to get Rosalind to respond, because women were really at the forefront, Rosalind, in poetry.
Yes, and in fact, the Poetry Association started by Harriet Monroe in the early 1900s, and she was a poet, and she felt that poets didn't get paid properly when they had their poetry published, and so her organization advocated for women or any poet to get paid for their work, and that poetry organization is still going strong today.
Women were also at the helm of journalism through newspapers in colonial America and during the Revolutionary War. Can you tell us a little bit about the women in those roles in journalism?
Sure. They started out, a lot of them, as printers, because their husbands were often printers, and they would inherit a business, or some of them started the businesses themselves, and they became sometimes printers, the official printers for colonies. It was a woman who published the first copy of the Declaration of Independence with the signers' names. That was something interesting I learned in researching this book. That
that was Catherine Goddard?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. So women were always there. They were, you know, underprivileged and didn't get the respect that they wanted and the opportunities. But women were there, and a number of women like Margaret Fuller did become foreign correspondents and traveled around and sent back reports from all over Mexico and all over the United States.
Can we fast forward nearly two centuries when Catherine Graham is at the helm of the most influential newspaper, you know, the Washington Post, publisher? How did she help define an era?
She took over the Washington Post when her husband died, and I read her memoir, and she felt, you know, that she really wasn't equipped to do it. But, of course, we know she did a wonderful job. And sometimes women were thrust into these positions and discovered that they were very capable. Dorothy Schiff was publisher of the New York Post in New York. And so these women were role models. They set the stage for other women to do the same thing.
Women were expected to do their own typing. Businessmen were proud of their inability to type. You write that. And when the typing pool disappeared and men learned word processing, what happened?
Well, everyone became their own typist, for sure. But it kind of, I think it may have taken away the stigma of typing for women, because everyone was doing it. What was interesting was I did a lot of research in the archives of the Women's National Book Association for this book, and the archives went back to the founding of the organization, and I saw that there were verbatim reports of the meetings and the speeches that were given, and I realized there must have been someone there who knew stenography.
There was a lot of attention to detail then as women were doing this typing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've often heard the stories of women taking factory jobs during World War II when the men were overseas. Women also played a role in war correspondence, as you've said, over time. There was photojournalist Margaret Bork White, who reported on the atrocities happening in Europe during the Nazi regime. What about her work?
Photojournalism really became important during that time, and women were there. Martha Gellhorn was also a journalist during World War II and very well respected. The problem was that women replaced men in all kinds of jobs in World War II because men were overseas. But then after the war, the men came back to claim those jobs, and because the war was so disruptive and so terrible in the country, people wanted to go back to normalcy. They wanted the standard kind of family makeup, the woman as a homemaker and mother and wife, and the men having the job. So women lost a lot of jobs after World War II. And I think that through the 50s, the anger that women felt was what fueled second wave feminism in the 60s.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Barbara in Woodstock, Illinois. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. I'm here to tell you how much libraries have influenced my life. When I was younger, and this was many decades ago, I was able to walk to my local library, and I became, you know, a voracious book reader from the age of 7 on. And my favorite author at the time, and still a favorite author of mine, was, of course, Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Mm.
And I have had the opportunity to visit all of her sites. We went to Mansfield, Ohio. If anybody is a Wilder fan, they would definitely want to see that last home that she and Al Manzo shared together.
Well, Barbara, and you want to give a shout-out to the Janesville Library.
I want to give a shout-out to the Hedberg Library in Janesville. As many libraries. They are just outstanding in education, of course. They present educational programs for the community, socialization through the book clubs, research. I do genealogy, and the librarians there are always ready to, you know, help out with interlibrary loans if I need information from other parts of the country. And, of course, the other thing now, and I'm sure any librarian would agree, they've also had to become a computer specialist.
Mm. Barbara, I have to stop you there, but Rosalind, it sounds like Barbara really has a really full life with her library.
That's really wonderful to hear. I was a librarian in public libraries for years, and I loved working in my own community.
There's a super cool story you tell about how the job of a librarian involves archiving and researching, and about the start of the Oscars. What about Margaret Herrick?
Oh, that's a wonderful story. Margaret Herrick came to Los Angeles in the 30s with her husband, who had a job at the Motion Picture Academy, and she was looking around for something to do, and so she decided to volunteer to run their library, and she did that for several years. And then World War II came along, and the men were all sent off to war. And so she was really the only one who understood the workings of the Motion Picture Academy, and they made her the director. And she remained the director of the Motion Picture Academy until 1971. And she was the one who named the Oscar, and she turned the award ceremony into the big event that it is today.
Throughout the book, we hear stories of women defying the odds and the low expectations that had been set for them, which is both inspiring and disappointing at the same time. But still today, despite the dominance of women in this industry, in publishing and library sciences, the pay disparity still prevails. Do women in the literary landscape still face these barriers?
Yes, you know, there is an issue of Publishers Weekly every year that tracks salary disparity, and it's still disheartening to see that there is disparity, that women are moving up into management much more, but there is still a salary disparity. Women really are the major, and have been for many years, the major employees in the publishing industry. The wonderful books that we read, you know, are the product of women editors. And so it's disturbing to see that has not changed. But there's a wonderful story about how women became children's book editors back in the 20s and 30s when publishers didn't believe that there was a market for children's books. And these women, so they said, oh, women can do this. We'll make them editors. And these brilliant women, regarding your last caller, they were the ones who discovered authors like Laura Ingalls Wilder and promoted them and nurtured them. Maurice Sendak, Robert McCloskey, all the classic children's books that you can think of were discovered and nurtured by women editors. It's a wonderful story.
Where can people go if they're interested in learning more about the Women's National Book Association, its history, how to get involved?
Well, our website is wnba-books.org, and we have chapters in 11 cities, but we also have a national membership category. So if you are not near a city where we have a chapter, you can join anyway and get a number of the benefits of membership. We are and always have been a volunteer organization. So we welcome new members and the energy and the ideas that they bring.
Rosalind, we just have a minute left, but I want to ask you, as you look at the publishing industry and the book world today, do you see still women pioneers today?
Definitely. I think women are still opening bookstores and welcoming their community in. I think librarians are still doing a wonderful job. It was great to hear your caller talk about that. I think libraries are a fabulous institution in this country, not duplicated elsewhere. And women still have an incredible role to play. I think even though we have more opportunities, there are still barriers to break.
Well, Rosalind, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Rosalind Reisner is a librarian and author. She co-wrote and edited the book Women in the Literary Landscape, a centennial publication of the Women's National Book Association. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.